Hello, I'm Representative Connie Bernardi, and welcome to the Senate File 975 Higher Education Omnibus Conference Committee. Pursuant to House Rule 10.01, I call this remote meeting to order. The committee legislative assistant will take the role.
Chair Bernardi.
Present.
Bernardi, present. Representative Christensen.
Present.
Christensen, present. Representative O'Neill.
Present.
O'Neill, present. Representative Keeler.
Present.
Keeler, present. Representative Cleavorn.
Cleavorn, present.
Cleavorn, present. Chair Tomasoni.
Here.
Tomasoni, present. Senator Rarick. Senator Clausen. Senator Goggin. Senator Jasinski.
Madam Chair.
Chair Tomasoni.
We just got off, hang on. We just got off the Senate floor, so I think the senators will be joining shortly.
Let's hold on a couple minutes here. I think it's would be important that we like give everyone a chance to. So if Chair Tomasoni, if you could watch for, help me watch for everybody to see if they get signed in.
Looks like Senator Clausen's there.
And what I think I'll do is Mish Mouse was in the middle of a roll call. Perhaps we can just finish that up, see if we have a quorum, but then just wait for your members if they are planning on coming right away to the hearing. I would like to wait for them and then proceed with our testimony.
There's some activity on the Senate floor right now, Madam Chair, so I don't know.
Oh, there is.
If they're waiting for the discussion to end or if they're having trouble getting online, but I believe they're probably waiting for the discussion to end on the Senate floor.
Oh, I was thinking that you had finished your session.
I thought we did, but it's still going on. We're under announcement, so it looks like we're probably adjourning now. Okay, we are officially adjourned, so I'm assuming they'll be joining us shortly.
Excellent. I see we have three of our senators. I would like to do is have Jenna Mouse, our committee legislative assistant, finish doing the roll call, and then we will have you, Chair Tomasoni, if you can check with your members when they expect to come, we can, if it's shortly, we can wait for them, but it'd probably be good to know, get confirmation they're checking in, and then we can get them checked into the committee when they get here.
Senator Jasinski has another committee going on at the same time. Looks like Senator Rarick is here, so looks like we have a quorum, Madam Chair.
Yes, we do. So what, Ms. Mouse, why don't you finish the roll call, and then I will go back to Chair Tomasoni and to see if he has any more members that are planning to attend. Okay, so please continue, Jenna Mouse.
Sure. Senator Rarick.
Present.
Rarick, present. Senator Clausen.
Present.
Clausen, present. Senator Goggin. And Senator Jasinski.
Madam Chair, I don't think Senator Goggin will be here today. And Senator, like I said, Senator Jasinski is in another meeting right now.
Okay. Well, thank you. And so, Jenna Mouse, did you say we do have a quorum? I didn't.
We do, Madam Chair.
Yeah, thank you very much. Okay, so we can proceed today then. Today we've asked the Office of Higher Education to join us to give an update on the guidelines for the federal funds that was shared this past week. We've also asked the University of Minnesota and Minnesota State to join us and share information and answer any questions that our members might have. I'll ask the members who have questions or discussion to please hold until the end of each testifier and to use the raise hand feature to let me know to call on you. First up, we have the Office of Higher Education, Commissioner Dennis Olson, will be giving us an overview of the updated guidelines. Welcome to the committee, Commissioner Olson.
Good afternoon, Chair Bernardi, Chair Tomasoni, and members. For the record, my name is Dennis Olson, and I serve as the Commissioner of the Minnesota Office of Higher Education. Thank you, Chair Bernardi, Chair Tomasoni, once again for the opportunity to address the conference committee here today. As Chair Bernardi mentioned, on Tuesday, May 11th, the U.S. Department of Education published its final guidance on the American Rescue Plan Act, the ARP, Higher Education Emergency Relief Fund 3, or HERF funds, as we've been calling them, using a lot of acronyms. And they've published that guidance in the form of a frequently asked questions document, or an FAQ document. Chair Bernardi mentioned I was asked to join the committee today and just take a few minutes to briefly walk through that FAQ document and share some of the key provisions in the guidance that would be of most interest, I think, to the committee. I'm sure you'll hear more detailed analysis of the guidance from Minnesota State and from University of Minnesota. So I'll just take this time to just briefly hit some of the highlights from the FAQ document. So if you had a chance to review the document, you'll notice that it starts with some overview questions about the federal appropriations. And really key in those overview questions, it makes special note of a couple of new requirements of the ARP funds that aren't currently required under the previous two federal bills, both the CARES Act and the CRISA. The two new requirements essentially are that institutions now must implement evidence-based practices to monitor and suppress coronavirus, and that's in accordance with public health guidelines. And in addition to that, institutions must now also conduct direct outreach to financial aid applicants about the opportunity to receive financial aid adjustments due to unforeseen circumstances like a recent unemployment of a family member or unemployment in the case of an independent student themselves. And of course, there's other circumstances there that are described in the overall Federal Higher Education Act, but those are the two new provisions that the ARP calls for that institutions are now mandated to carry out. The document then walks into asking questions and answering questions related to the student emergency aid grant portion of the funding. You know, for purposes of this section, it starts with some definitions, and it really defines a student as someone who either is or was enrolled in an institution of higher education during the COVID-19 national emergency. The students that are eligible for emergency financial aid grants from the HERF funding are eligible regardless of whether they completed a free application for federal student aid, the FAFSA, or if they're eligible for Title IV aid, and that's Pell Grant funding. So just like under the CRISA, institutions are directed with these new ARP funds as well to continue to prioritize students with, and they call out specifically, exceptional need. So these would be students who, of course, receive Pell Grants or are undergraduates with extraordinary financial circumstances. They have to prioritize those in awarding emergency financial aid grants to students. You know, beyond Pell eligibility, too, there are some other ways that they define exceptional need, and that, you know, includes students who may be eligible for other federal or state need-based aid, or students that have faced significant unexpected expenses either for themselves or, you know, something that would affect their financial circumstances, such as the loss of employment, reduced income, or, of course, food or housing insecurity, which we've talked about at length during committee. So just, you know, a couple of the key questions I'll walk through for the student emergency aid grant section. One of the first questions that's asked is, you know, how may students utilize their emergency financial aid grants? And the answer provided in the guidance document is essentially that, you know, emergency grants may be used by students for any component of their cost of attendance or for emergency costs that arise due to coronavirus. And I think that's important to know that this is expenses related to the coronavirus. So students can utilize their grants for tuition, for food and housing, for healthcare, and that does include mental health care and child care. And, you know, a key provision in that answer to that question is that students themselves determine how they may use their emergency financial aid grant within the allowable uses. And so, you know, they themselves determine how that's to be allocated and utilized. The second question really moves into, you know, can an institution direct or control what students may use their emergency aid grants on? Short answer is no. The institution cannot direct that. Again, that is up to the students themselves to determine. You know, so they have to actually provide, you know, written authorization that the funding can be utilized in a certain way, and so the students themselves can direct the institution to apply it. But, you know, the institution cannot control how that is utilized. That is up to the student, again, for those related allowable expenses. Finally, within that section, a question, can institutions include that amount of HERF student emergency aid grant in the student's financial aid award package? Essentially, the short answer is, again, no. These emergency financial grants are not financial aid. Although you see the word financial appear there, they are not financial aid according to the U.S. Department of Education. And once again, students have discretion about how they receive their grants, and institutions must receive affirmative written consent from the student before using any emergency financial aid grants to satisfy a student's outstanding account balance. The document then moves into asking and answering questions about the ways that institutions can utilize the institutional portion of their funds. You know, the allocation formula, as a reminder, is the same as the CRISA bill, meaning that the institution must use 50% of the portion of its allocation for emergency grants for students. And so the remaining becomes the institution portion. And, you know, it really leads off with, what are the allowable uses of funds for institutional uses? And the answer is that, you know, under the ARP, similar to the CRISA Act, allowable uses include defraying expenses associated with the coronavirus. So an institution, you know, may defray expenses like lost revenue, reimbursement for expenses that have already been incurred, technology costs that may have been associated with the transition to distance education, implementing faculty and staff trainings, and of course, payroll. In addition, institutions can, if they choose, utilize their institutional portion to make additional emergency aid grants to students. And so, you know, as I mentioned previously, under the new ARP rules, institutions must also meet those two additional mandates, which are to implement those evidence-based practices to monitor and suppress COVID in accordance with public health guidelines, and to, again, conduct that outreach to financial aid applicants about the opportunity to potentially receive a financial aid adjustment based on other circumstances. The next key question there is, you know, can an institution use these ARP funds or HERF funds to discharge student debt or unpaid balances to their institution? And the answer there actually is yes. There are some examples there where the guidance directs institutions to look at issues like transcript withholding debts, enrollment holds, and transfer student transcripts due to an unpaid balance. You know, those can be handled, but once again, however, institutions cannot just unilaterally discharge a student's outstanding account balance without the prior written consent of that student to be able to do that. So, Madam Chair and Mr. Chair, those are kind of the key provisions within the guidance document. Of course, there's a whole lot more in terms of instruction on how to receive the allocation, things that don't necessarily impact the overall uses for students and for institutions. So I won't highlight those, but they are, of course, included in the guidance document. And then I'll just, if I may, take this time to, you know, reiterate that, you know, as we continue to go through this process here in conference committee, you know, it remains a priority that we adequately fund our public institutions to make sure that we maintain the highest level of service and support. You know, of course, not only for our students, but really to position our faculty and our staff to be successful in delivering a world-class education to our students. And, you know, we know we've said it many times throughout committee, COVID has presented us with, you know, a unique set of circumstances and challenges. And I know the state is grateful for this federal emergency relief that we're talking about here that's been provided by the federal government solely to try to backfill those budget shortfalls caused by the pandemic. But, you know, again, it's also the state's responsibility here to ensure that, you know, we have adequate, sustainable support and that we continue to provide it to our public institutions. And so, you know, with that, Chair Bernardi and Chair Tomasoni and members, that concludes my testimony. I'll, of course, be on here to answer questions, as will Nikki Oliver from our office. And again, I'm sure you'll hear more detail related to this guidance and its impact and planned implementation for both of our public systems. But thank you for your time, and thanks once again for the opportunity to address the committee today.
Thank you, Commissioner Olson. Members, are there any questions or discussion at this point in our presentation? I don't see any. And we can always come back as well. So we will proceed with our next presenter, which is Vice Chancellor Bill Mackey from Minnesota State. Welcome to the committee. Please proceed.
Thank you. Chair Bernardi, Chair Tomasoni, members of the conference committee. For the record, I am Bill Mackey, Vice Chancellor for Finance and Facilities with Minnesota State. Appreciate the opportunity to update the committee on the most current information we have related to our budget planning and with the release of the third federal stimulus package. On Tuesday, the 30 colleges and 7 universities of Minnesota State were allocated $167 million for student grants and $160 million for institutional use. The total amount we received is very close to the previous estimates that we have shared with you this session. For comparison purposes, the student grant portion in this round of funding is 3.5 times the size of the amount from the previous rounds of $47 million allocated in the CARES and the CERISA relief packages. In determining how our student grant funds will be distributed, we previously testified about the robust student consultation process that Chancellor Malhotra put in place at each of the 37 colleges and universities with campus and student leadership. We expect a similar process will be implemented with American Rescue Plan student grant funding. That process included each campus allocating at least 10% of the student funding for emergency assistance grants. These funds would be available for exceptional need circumstances this summer and throughout next school year to assist with students in great need. We anticipate that most of the $167 million for student grants will be dispersed during the 21-22 academic year. Like the CERISA guidelines, institutions are directed with the ARP funds to prioritize students with exceptional need, such as students who receive Pell Grants or undergraduates with extraordinary financial circumstances. In addition, our colleges and universities cannot direct or control what students use their emergency grants on. As mentioned by Commissioner Olson, the grant is provided to the student and may be used by the student for any component of their cost of attendance or for emergency costs that arise due to the coronavirus, such as housing, food, healthcare, or childcare. I also would like to reiterate a point I made in a previous committee meeting in which we were able to report that Minnesota State campuses allocated an additional $16 million from their institutional funding from CARES and CERISA to direct aid to students since the pandemic began. Minnesota State students have received to this point in excess of $100 million in student grants from the first two rounds of stimulus funding, with the third round yet to come. Wanting now to address some of the language that is being discussed and reviewing the guidance from the U.S. Department of Education, we do not believe the ARP funds can be used for a tuition reduction that would be implemented fall semester 2021. According to the guidance, lost revenue needs to be directly associated with the pandemic and refers to revenue expected but reduced or eliminated due to COVID-19. As for the faculty stipends, we also don't believe it would be an acceptable use of the federal funding. The funding requirements are we need to document new costs and how they are responsive to the pandemic and how these new or altered costs are for things that enable or to help continue educating our students. We don't believe that paying faculty after the semester has ended meets these federal guidelines. Similar to CERISA guidelines, as Commissioner Olson mentioned, allowable uses for ARP institutional funding are focused on defraying expenses associated with the coronavirus and making additional financial grants to students. Practically speaking, that means that of the $160 million of ARP funding available to our institutions in the coming year, none of it is allowed to be used for increases in areas such as personnel and fixed costs, which are already projected to be more than 1% higher than current levels, even at current contract rates. Besides the two required uses added in the ARP Act that Commissioner Olson mentioned, our colleges and universities plan to utilize the $160 million for institutional use in a variety of ways that reflect the priorities for their college and university. Some of our institutions will use this funding for lost revenue from last year that was not recovered from the CARES or CERISA funding. All of our colleges and universities are concerned about their enrollments for fall semester 2021. Minnesota State enrollment numbers are down 20% year to date for fall semester in comparison to the last semester prior to the pandemic, fall 2019. Many colleges and universities will need to utilize their ARP funding to cover lost revenue from tuition loss and, if applicable, revenue lost in the residence halls and with other auxiliary activities. While there are still 3+ months until fall semester begins, anecdotally, there are more variables than ever for students or prospective students to decide whether or not to enroll at one of our colleges and universities. While we are still learning more about the guidance we received 2 days ago, our campuses are already also making plans to make additional investments that align with their priorities in protecting the health and safety of our students, faculty, and staff, and enabling the students to continue their progress towards their educational goals. Those investments include additional technology, minor remodeling, such as improving HVAC systems and ensuring social distancing in classrooms, as well as additional student grants. Well, there are several documents that were posted for this meeting. I wanted to provide some additional information and context related to the Minnesota State handouts that were shared with committee members. There's one titled Aggregated Federal Funds Reporting for Minnesota State, and is titled Minnesota State Federal Funds Allocation, Reported Revenue Losses and COVID Spending, and Cost of 5% Tuition Cut. I want to be sure the impression is not left. There's $186 million available in institutional funds that can be utilized for a tuition reduction. There are some significant issues with that assumption. And I want to refer to another document titled Minnesota State CARISA Allocations that shows the $140 million in CARISA funding that has already been allocated by our colleges and universities for allowable expenses such as additional student grants, new technology needs, new campus safety efforts, additional student support activities, and additional instructional costs. While this $140 million is still mostly not spent, it is committed for COVID-related expenses and lost revenues, so I do not believe it should be categorized as remaining federal funds. Secondly, the total federal funds are available in the three rounds for institutions over a 26 to 27 month time period. And the lost revenue reported on the document only accounts for fiscal year 21 lost revenue, which is a 12 month period. To fully show the relationship, we should compare the total lost revenue over the entire period the federal funds are allocated. The $93 million represents less than half of that time period. And lastly, I want to reemphasize that these federal funds cannot be used for future looking across the board tuition reductions. And I would be happy to answer any other additional questions related to data related to Minnesota State, but I wanted to reemphasize those points and not have the impression that there's $180 million of federal money available to our institutions that is not, in a sense, already spoken for. And that, again, it is not allowed to be used for an across-the-board tuition reduction. Our colleges and universities are very fortunate to have received this federal funding to support our students, to help with these additional operating costs, and to cover lost revenue that has occurred over the past year due to the pandemic. I would continue to stress to the committee, though, that these one-time funds, however, do not take the place of ongoing revenue that our colleges and universities rely on to support their students. Minnesota State needs ongoing state appropriation and tuition revenue to continue to deliver high quality instruction and services. The one-time federal funds are very valuable in helping us get through this unprecedented time of a pandemic, but cannot be relied on to cover our ongoing costs that we rely on from the state and from tuition revenue. Thank you, Chair Bernardi, Chair Tomasoni, and committee members for your time. That concludes my testimony, and I'd be happy to respond to any questions you may have.
Thank you, Vice Chancellor Mackey. Members, is there any questions, discussion? Senator Claussen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Mackey, could you explain the difference between two documents that I'm looking at? One is the Minnesota State Federal Funds Allocations and Reported Revenue Losses, and then the other is Minnesota State Full Year 2021 Revenue Losses.
Vice Chancellor Mackey.
Chair Bernardi, Senator Klassen, the document titled Minnesota State FY21 Revenue Losses is a document that was prepared by Minnesota State and was shared with the conference committee. The document titled Aggregated Federal Funds were the Minnesota State Federal Funds Allocations Reported Revenue Loss and COVID Spending. The numbers from that revenue loss document was pulled into this document, but the document pulls information from several different sources. And so it's a document that I believe was prepared by staff utilizing some of the numbers that we provided. So as I mentioned in my testimony, I believe particularly with the lost revenue portion of it, we provided the committee with what our lost revenue was for fiscal year 21. And I believe that in order to make a better comparison on how it relates to our federal funds, we would need to use the same time frame as when the federal funds were available, which are basically from April 2020 all the way through May 2022. So that hopefully that provides some clarity.
Senator Klassen, do you have a follow-up?
Yeah, Madam Chair. So as I understand, we're just looking at different time frames when we're looking at these two documents.
Chair Bernardi, Senator Klassen, yes. Chair Bernardi, Senator Klassen, yes, the timeline for the lost revenue number is a shorter timeline than some of the other numbers on that spreadsheet.
Thank you.
Representative Cleaborn.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I just want to have a little bit of clarification. Mr. Mackey, are you saying that your staff prepared that?
Vice Chancellor Mackey.
Chair Bernardi, Representative Cleaborn, we submitted the document titled Minnesota State FY21 Revenue Losses was prepared by our staff at Minnesota State. The document that's titled Aggregated or Minnesota State Federal Funds Allocations Reported Revenue Loss and COVID Spending, we provided numbers that went into that spreadsheet, but we did not prepare that spreadsheet.
Right. Thank you. The word staff means a lot of people, and I was just trying to see if that was your spreadsheet, but you're saying it is not. So thank you so much.
Oh, Madam Chair.
Chair Tomasoni.
So it's clear that came from my staff, but it was after a long period of time trying to get numbers and trying to get accurate numbers. And so this is based on, as Mr. Mackey said, numbers that were provided to us. And if there's other numbers that should go into the sheet, it might be a good idea for the Minnesota State to actually input the numbers here so we can actually see what they are saying in comparison to these numbers, because if you look at the numbers that we were actually given, it does indicate that if we used federal funds, a 5% tuition cut would actually show that we have money left over from the federal funds. So if these numbers aren't accurate as a result of not getting enough information or not getting all the numbers that are necessary to be inputted here, we might want to have this updated in such a way that we have all the numbers so that we can see everything.
Were you asked? Okay, so I don't think there was a question in that.
I think, Madam Chair, that I'm hearing that there's more numbers available than what were given to us. And the fact that we asked for them and we used the numbers that we got. This is the report that came out of it. And if numbers are still being determined, I understand that. But there's really not a question. It's just an explanation of the spreadsheet. That's all. And maybe the spreadsheet needs to be updated by Minnesota State by giving us more numbers. But that's something that I don't really have a handle on, because the numbers we're showing here are the ones that were given to us.
Vice Chair Mackey, do you have a response at all?
Yeah, thank you, Chair Bernardi. Chair Tomasoni, I would like to make 2 points. We can certainly, Minnesota State can certainly provide for more information. I would say one item that's missing from this sheet is that we did provide $140 million spending plan for the CRISA funding, and that's not included on the spreadsheet. So it appears that money is still not committed and that there's no plans for it. So I believe that should be included. And then secondly, there are some numbers that we're not able to provide at this point because the federal money is also intended to help us with lost revenue for next academic year. And I mentioned an enrollment update for next fall, and we won't know exactly what the impact of lost revenue is until we start the next academic year. So we could provide some estimates based on enrollment projections, but we won't have actual numbers until then.
Vice Chair Mackey, I want to clarify the federal funds cannot be used for a ongoing tuition cut.
Chair Bernardi, we, as we interpreted and have consulted related to the guidelines for the ARP funds and the other rounds of funding, that lost revenue needs to be directly associated with the pandemic and refers to revenue expected or reduced or eliminated directly to the pandemic. So generally speaking, that loss of revenue occurs based on having less students or less activity versus reductions that occur with rates.
Senator Klassen.
Just wanted to make the point that I know this is a work in progress, but as we move forward, we really need to have as accurate information as we can. And I think as Mr. Mackey has explained about spend down tuition in 2021 through a freeze may not be part of this. I think because it would be considered to be supplanting those funds, and I think it's pretty clear in the documentation that cannot be done, and perhaps Mr. Olson, Commissioner Olson, could comment on that, please.
Commissioner Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Klassen. I read it the same. We read it the same as you just outlined, and as Vice Chancellor Mackey has stated. That's what we read in the guidance as well.
Senator Klassen, do you have a follow-up?
No, I just appreciate the clarification. Thank you.
Is there any further discussion or questions before we move on to the University of Minnesota?
Madam Chair, maybe I should ask
Chair Tomasoni.
Mr. Mackey if he believes that the federal money could be used for the online tuition refund.
Vice Chancellor Mackey.
Chair Bernardi, Chair Tomasoni, I would have to get back to you on that. I did not spend the time yet looking into whether or not that it can be used for that purpose. So we'll get back to you on that.
Thank you, Mr.
Chair Tomasoni. Okay.
You know, the interesting part about tuition in all of this and the confusing part about it is that there are several different tuitions that can be refunded with federal money, which is why we were looking at the possibility of using it for a tuition reduction. For example, enrollment tuition loss is an acceptable refund, and the students can actually use their refunds to pay their tuition, and it's potentially the online tuition refund can be used also with federal money. So there's a lot of uses for the federal money for tuition. So I'm more than willing to accept the analysis that it can't be used for tuition reduction, but I do have to say that there is a lot of information about federal money and using it for tuition.
Vice Chair Mackey, do you have a response about that?
I don't, Chair Bernardi. Thank you.
Is there any further discussion or questions? Okay, we are going to move on to the Associate Vice President, Julie Tonneson from the University of Minnesota. Welcome to our committee. Please proceed.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry, but you're stuck with me. For the record, my name is Myron Fran, Senior Vice President for Finance and Operations.
Welcome to the committee. Please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate it. I'd like to kind of start with the conclusion and then sort of back up about how we got there about the use of the federal funds. And I appreciate really what Commissioner Olson, Office of Higher Education Commissioner Olson, talked about earlier. As always, he's informed and instructive, and I thought his review of those dynamics and the regulations was helpful and directly on point, as was Vice Chancellor Mackey's. But what I'd like to sort of start off by saying is that, you know, we've obviously reviewed the federal guidance, and in consultation with our general counsel's office, it's our opinion that neither of the two Senate provisions that relate to the use of federal funding are permissible under the ARP, or the American Relief Plan. The intent of the law, obviously, is to offset the negative impacts on students and the institutions. And while students can use their portion to help pay down their tuition bills, it is our opinion that using it to lower tuition is not allowed. Further, we do not believe that the faculty stipend is permissible under the guidelines of the new law. Our understanding is that the institutional part of federal funding is for relief of the institution or for additional expenses incurred and revenue losses as a result of the pandemic. Paying an additional stipend to faculty was not required as a result of the pandemic. It is a new spending item. It would reduce our ability to use the federal funding to address pandemic-related expenses and revenue losses. So generally, I would say that our opinion is that the American Relief Plan funding is intended for COVID-related institutional expenses or to student grants. Neither a forward-looking tuition rollback nor stipends to in-person faculty address COVID-related institutional expenses. Let me just add that, you know, as we went through the process, my screen's moving around here, as we went through the process, we took a look at our fiscal 20 and fiscal 21 losses or shortfalls, if you will, deficits. We had a total deficit in 2020 and now in 2021 of nearly $235 million. Now, we have not requested any emergency relief funding from the state. What we've done is we've made budget cuts at the university, reviewed budget reserves, we've used budget balances in different departments, we've had salary cuts, we've had early retirements. All of this was our responsibility to respond to the emergency that we were faced with. What we're asking today is to have you appreciate the fact that even after we've received in the three different tranches of money, a total of about $105 million in total federal funds for the institution, not for the students. Even after you apply that federal funding, we're still $130 million under the losses that we've incurred in fiscal 20 and fiscal 21. Now, our goal is to continue to work on solving those immediate deficits in 2020 and 2021. And frankly, some of these are going to move over into 22 as we go forward. We're not going to be able to solve all of this with our reserves and our balances. We're going to have to provide some loans to some of our auxiliaries. And as you know, University of Minnesota is a little unique in the sense as a large place-based institution, we have a lot of activities, whether it's housing or parking or dining or the athletics. There's a lot of money that comes in as a result of those activities. Well, clearly that money was reduced and in some cases practically eliminated. So we're still trying to finalize the final effects of those dollars. And we frankly believe that even in 22, we're not going to return to what normal was, whatever normal is these days. So we are concerned about going forward. Our ask to you is to support our request for those items that we think are really critical for higher education going forward at the University of Minnesota to continue to attract the best and the brightest and provide the best opportunities for research, teaching, and service. But we believe that the federal funding, and I'm the first one to say thank you for the federal funding. I hate to think about what kind of pickle, that pickle, by the way, is a technical finance term we use at the university. I'd hate to feel what kind of pickle would we be in without that federal money. But frankly, we now need you to help us step up going forward to invest in us and to really provide that opportunity for us to deliver the kind of services and education and research that people in Minnesota have come to expect. And so I'm happy to take any questions, and I hope I can, I hope I've answered some of your questions and provide any information. We sent some information over so you can see exactly where the money we received from for students and for the institution were received. There's a different amount allocated for different campuses, but I'm happy to take any questions. Thank you so much, Chair Bernardi and Chair Tomasoni and all the members of the committee for the opportunity to speak before a conference committee. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, is there any discussion or any questions for, I don't know his exact title right now these days. I'm guessing Vice President Franz. Am I correct or?
Very close, Madam Chair. It's Senior Vice President. I don't know if that's much as stature or just age, but anyway, it's Senior Vice President.
Thank you very much. Or to Vice Chancellor Mackey or to Commissioner Olson.
Madam Chair,
Chair Tomasoni.
As I'm looking at the charts that you provided, there's a couple of spots where you have university reserves listed. And I think under the FY20 solutions, it refers to $21.88 million. That is money that you used from the reserve to solve budgets, if I understand that correctly. And then on the other page where it says FY21 planned solutions, and it says $38 million in cuts/reserves, is that your plan to use the reserves again for 2021? And then how much more do you have in the reserves?
Mr. Franz.
Madam Chair and Senator Tomasoni. So the first answer is yes. Number you showed was the amount of reserves and balances that we used in fiscal 2020 to help solve the budget crisis. And this, the $38 million is the amount we anticipate to use both in budget cuts, as you mentioned, and use of reserves. The reserve amount is set by the board, and I don't have the exact amount. I know that coming into the crisis, we had around $40 million in reserves at the university, and maybe a little bit over $40 million. And now that we've used that amount in 2020 and in 2021, we're using some more. So the reserve levels are coming down, and I can get you those exact numbers, Senator Tomasoni. I don't have them in front of me, but as you know, the key to having reserves or a rainy day fund is to use them when there's a rainy day, and we certainly have that now. But I can give the exact figures that you require.
So, Madam
Chair Tomasoni,
it looks like you have in your document $130 million of shortfall even after you received the COVID funds. Is that the ARP funds that you're referring to, or is that all, or is that the first two tranches of funding, or is that all three together?
Myron Franz.
Madam Chair and Senator Tomasoni, about $104 million, $105 million, that is from all three tranches. So after receiving all three tranches, I'm applying this to two fiscal years. So in fiscal 20 and 21, we had $235 million collectively in those 2 years shortfall. We received $105 million from the three tranches of federal dollars, which left us with $130 million problem to solve, some of which you've described already.
And Madam Chair, of the $170 million for the FY21 plan solutions, is tuition being planned, planned increase in tuition involved in that, or don't you know that yet?
Myron Franz.
Madam Chair and Senator, we don't know the answer to that yet, Senator, obviously. And we're working We will present our recommendations to the Board of Regents in June for them to make that determination about our recommended budget and whether there should be any tuition change or not. I will mention that the fiscal year end for fiscal 21, we'll have about $14 million left in our reserve that we brought down over these last 2 years. So it's a significant reduction in our reserves, and that's where we are with that.
And Madam Chair, one last
Chair
question.
Chair Tomasoni.
Your request of the legislature was $46.5 million, and that's not in any of these numbers, right?
Madam Chair, Senator Thomas, so that's correct. That's these numbers really reflect fiscal 20, fiscal 21, and our request is for fiscal 22 and fiscal 23. But so they're not reflected in these numbers. You're right.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Thank you. I see we have Representative Cleburne, and then we have Senator Claussen on deck. Representative Cleburne.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senior Vice President Franz. And I will say this is not an ageist committee, so the senior must have more to do with your authority, not one your position than your age. I just want to make sure that in this conversation that we're having, and we're looking at this, my screen just went blank. We're looking at this $130 million shortfall that the university will have after implementing all of the pandemic-related federal money. You know, I know that we are concerned primarily about our students and our families. And you and I have had conversations before about my desire to have a full understanding of what it costs our institutions to do the mission that we require of them. And for you and your institution, you have academics, outreach, and scientific research that you must do. This money that you're asking from the state, if that money does not come to you this year, will that have a significant impact on our students and families? Because that's what I want to prevent. So I'm just trying to get my head around, if you only have $14 million in reserves, there's not a lot there to either float your scientific research, as you sometimes have to do before grants come in, and it doesn't give you a lot of wiggle room. So is the request that you're asking for sufficient to meet the needs that you're going to have this year? It seems like a very large hole that you're sitting in right now. Is that correct?
Senior VP Franz.
Thank you. Yes, it is a long-term problem. And one of our concerns was that with the reduction in auxiliaries and athletics, that really creates a real drain on our resources, because of that we're not bringing in that money to support those buildings and people and activities. So we do believe that we can manage this. Obviously we don't want to use any more reserves beyond this year if we can avoid it, because getting down to $14 million is really pretty low for the university. It's akin to a pretty low amount for the state, for example, in their reserve fund. So we really need to maintain some of that, because we don't know what's going to happen. I think that the concern and the reason that our request was modest was out of a recognition that these are challenging times, and we wanted to really reflect that the funds that we request will be used immediately to provide opportunities to engage in new teaching opportunities. We really want to support the tuition-free proposal for families who make under $50,000, the Promise Minnesota scholarship opportunities. But beyond that, we want to increase our support of our research and scientific activities that you mentioned. You know, I would tell you, from if you step back a little way, and which you and I have had this conversation, and you look at the trajectory of the state support for the higher education in general in the state of Minnesota and around the country. I mean, it's not just us, but we've seen that continual sort of drop in the percentage of general fund revenue coming to higher education, and the amount of money that, in dollar amounts that has come to the university and Minnesota State University as well. I think we're concerned about that trend, and we need to stop that trend from going any further down. And we do believe that we can maintain our current excellence in that, and really world-class education and scientific endeavors, but we simply cannot bottom out anymore. There will be consequences. We will pull back on some of the investments we were planning on making if we don't get the full request that we made to the governor and to the legislature. So, it's a hard future to think about if we don't, as a state, continue to support and higher education to the extent that we really need to keep attracting the talented students we want to attract and to give them the education that lets them compete on a world platform, frankly. So we're worried about it. We do think that you're welcome to give us more, by the way, but we think that we can, I will never turn that down, right? But we do believe that under the current analysis, we can meet the needs to really expand in some of these areas, I think will be very promising for the next few years.
Representative Claiborne, do you have a
follow-up? I just want to make a statement, really. I'm very concerned about our students and families and making sure that we have the academic programs available to them to reach their full potential in a way that they can afford them. But also, I just want to state Senior Vice President Fran's last statement, the innovation that comes from the University of Minnesota's research that is used all across our state also helps provide those jobs that we need for our families and to build those businesses that we need for our families to grow and thrive in Minnesota. So I just want to thank him for focusing on that as well. Thank you.
Okay, we have Senator Claussen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senior Vice President Friends, a question for you about reserves. Most institutions have a percentage that they're looking at that should be in reserves in relationship to operational costs. Can you share that with us?
Madam Chair and
Vice President Franz.
I knew you were going to ask that, Senator Claussen. I don't have the percentage right in my head. I'm trying to remember. I know the target number, that percentage reflected, was a little over 40 million before the COVID-19. Maybe it's coming. So it's 25, I now have it. So I have a friend out there. So it's the 25 million is a minimum actual number, or 4% of the state appropriation, whichever is greater. So in this case, it was a 4% that added up to a little over 40 million that was greater. So that we look at 4% of the state appropriation as a reserve level.
And a follow-up,
Senator Claussen.
Is that in a statute?
No,
I see
what my friend says, but I believe that's a university policy. But it's a Board of Regents policy.
Thank you.
Senator Claussen, do you follow up?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Right. Are there any other questions to any of our speakers here today? We also have Nikki Oliver, Paul Cerfenik, and obviously we have Commissioner Olson, Vice Chair Mackey, and Senior Vice President Franz to ask questions. And I see we have a question from Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I guess mine's not really a question. It might end up in a question, but it's not really starting there. Mine's, and it's more of the broader conversation that we've been having, I feel, really all session. And as I've learned in a lot of our conversations, jobs matter. We hear a lot about it on the floor when it comes to other issues. We hear a lot about it in our communities that, you know, as a whole, we're really trying to protect jobs and people working. And I really want to bring attention to some things when it comes to higher ed. In my community, I have beautiful schools and beautiful programs that are implementing, a growth in economics. I live in Moorhead, so we have Minnesota State University Moorhead, we have M State, we have Concordia. A third of my community, our income is because of education jobs. And because we haven't supported them, and because we're not giving institutions the money that they need, we're losing jobs. So it's so much bigger than just our students. Yes, we want our students to be successful. We want students to earn degrees, become thriving individuals in our community and stay in our state. But I want to take the time, Chair Bernardi, if it's okay, just to run through some information to really bring this to light when we talk about jobs. Is that okay?
Please proceed, Representative Keeler.
I have a couple data points from three universities in Greater Minnesota because I don't want them to go overlooked. So it's Winona, St. Cloud, and Moorhead. And so in Winona, 4 years ago, they had to let go 33 faculty and are planning to cut 23 more. Outside of faculty numbers, other positions across that university, they're planning to cut 23 individuals. Those are jobs. Those are jobs that they're going to be losing in that community. And that means that they have to reduce what they can provide for our students. In St. Cloud, it's the same thing. We talk a lot about how important mental health is. Some of the things we both brought forward in this bill and the side-by-sides is the importance of mental health and providing that for students. In St. Cloud, because of the reduction that we're getting, they have to let two mental health counselors go. So it's so contradicting that we're going to sit here and say that we care about mental health, yet we're not funding systems adequately to keep the people on staff to do this work. As some of you know, the football team in 2019 was also eliminated. And as we've heard here, you know, athletics is a way to create a revenue as well. So we're cutting full football programs and those staff. That's also, you know, eliminating opportunities for our student athletes. In my community, we've been seeing this long before the pandemic. This has rocked our community because as of tomorrow, we will be losing 24 faculty across 18 disciplines. So what that's doing is it's reducing our faculty staff down to almost nothing. We've had to eliminate different programs, completely closed programs, including, just to name a few, advertising, paralegal, Spanish education, teaching education as a second language. Those are all things that we talk about in this movement of what we want Minnesota to be like. And so I know that we get into the weeds about tuition, and I know that it's some of the things that people feel it's easy to cut and we don't want to fund our systems. But at the end of the day, these are jobs. These are jobs in our communities in Greater Minnesota. It's how we thrive. It's how we grow. It's how we invest in the next generation. And I just don't think that I have brought it forward enough from my lens and the work that I do. I really care about our students, but I also really care about our faculty and staff that provide those opportunities. And so I hope as we continue to go through this conversation and once we get our targets and we know where we sit, that we really understand that if we do not fund our systems for what they've asked for, this is directly impacting our economy in our smaller, greater Minnesota communities. So I did really good. I don't think that ended in any kind of a question. I just wanted to make it very clear in this public space that this is just another reason why we need to invest in this. And we can't say that jobs matter in other areas of work and say that they don't matter in higher education.
Okay, thank you. Members, is there any more discussion or questions?
Madam Chair.
Chair Tomasoni.
I'm agreeing with Representative Keeler again. And the reason I'm agreeing is because when you come from small communities in rural Minnesota and there's 100 professors at a community college, that's a big economic impact to these small communities. And I know I totally agree that jobs are a big deal here. And I totally agree that we need to fund our systems. And hopefully we're able to do that. But at the same time, we have a real lot of needs that students are expressing to us, like mental health and like food insecurity. And it goes on and on, the list goes on and on. So there's a need for funding in a lot of different places.
Okay, Representative Cleavorn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just wanna say thank you to Chair Tomasoni as well for raising that issue. Our students do have many many needs, and we do have to meet those needs. I just want to make sure that we don't fall into, and I mean this most respectfully, into the false choice category. You know, our budgets are always our priority in the Senate and in the House. That's our job. That's what we have to do. But they're also our value statements. And making sure that our institutions are strong help alleviate the stresses that our families are feeling about whether or not their students will have the resources available to complete their education on time and move on to the next chapter of their life. You know, I was concerned, and I was hoping Representative Keeler did such a great job of bringing the awareness of the positions that are being cut. But we also have to think about some of our programs that are in jeopardy of losing their accreditation. So things like counselor education at Winona State and the Department of Education at Rochester, Winona's Rochester campus, you know, if they lose any more faculty, they won't be able to have their accreditation. And we just can't have that happen. And it's incumbent upon us to make these really hard choices and to make sure that our systems are really strong. So I'm very glad to hear your commitment to our public institutions and keeping them strong. It gives me great hope that our committee will be able to get our work done in a very positive and collaborative way. Thank you.
Hey, members, are there any further questions or discussion? I actually have a question that I wanted to ask Senior Vice Chair, Vice President Franz and Vice Chancellor Mackey. When the operation and maintenance is like a line item in our budget, and that's our state commitment to higher education for our students throughout the state for opportunities and being able to have economic prosperity for them and their families. If we, how important is that for your university to get towards our state commitment, which is in statute, I have it here, 135A.01, that references about the 67% commitment of the state of Minnesota of funding higher education and the other to 33% students. I have it in front of me about in 2002, 66.3% was covered by the state and for higher education, the appropriation and tuition relationship, and 33.7% was provided by the student. Now it's gotten to be around 50%. And I would just wanting to ask you how it impacts us if there isn't that state commitment to the or to the operation and maintenance of the colleges and universities. How does that impact students? Senior Vice President Franz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, it's a really good point. I mean, I think part of the long-term issue here and the ability to support the higher education issues at the level that, you know, the statute really states has been a problem and continues to make it difficult to meet these goals. I think, you know, if we were to sort of back up and start all over again, I think we might design the system differently. But given where we are, I think we continue to be concerned about the ability to make those commitments with the funding being relatively flat, frankly. I mean, it was down for a while, then the last number of years it's been relatively flat. So I think we have a lot of concern about being able to continue to meet that. But it erodes, you know, it erodes our ability to add new programs or to get more students in some of these programs that want to come into these programs. And when you don't have that state O&M money, because, you know, really the money that we can operate with the most amount of discretion are the tuition dollars and the O&M money. I mean, the money that we receive at the university for the foundation is really directed specifically for particular items, and very helpful. And we appreciate every one of those dollars. But the O&M money and the tuition money provides us the flexibility to really design programs, design academic programs specifically for the needs that we have out there in the current state of Minnesota and well around the world, frankly. And so, you know, this trajectory is an ongoing problem. I don't know what, I haven't, you know, put paper to pen to figure out what amount would actually get us where we think we need to be ultimately on a, in a perfect world, but we don't live in a perfect world, right? So, so I'm sort of being vague about that because I'm not sure exactly where those dollars hit us, but we are concerned about the ability to manage our offerings, to manage our student activities at a level that really meet the statutory design.
Okay, and Vice Chancellor Mackey, I just wanted to just follow up with you about the relation of moving towards a 66% state investment and 33% student investment, and how important it is for operation and maintenance to be funded for state colleges and universities to be able to provide opportunities for our students and have our state commitment follow that.
Thanks, Chair Bernardi. To add to Senior Vice President Franz's comments, a couple other things jump out to me related to Minnesota State. One of them is that, when funding was closer to two-thirds from the state and one-third came for tuition, is that generally, during that time period of where we are today, more of the cost of the education shifted from the state to the students, which brings us to the discussions we're having now about tuition rates and in the recent past about tuition freezes and tuition reductions. So the more the state invests, it ultimately helps the students on their tuition rates. I think the other piece that jumps out at me related to consistent and adequate O&M funding is that for our 53 campuses in Minnesota State, when the percentage or when a two-thirds of it is coming through O&M, there tends to be more stability and less volatility happening at each one of our individual campuses. And there was discussion about some of the programmatic changes that are happening at some of the universities that Representative Keeler mentioned. Some of those types of decisions tend to happen over a longer time horizon if there isn't such an immediate revenue impact based on lost enrollment or tuition, if there's more stable revenue source like there was in the past when we were more in that 2002 and prior year of receiving more funding from the state. So a strong O&M number, I believe, ultimately tuition rates end up being lower for students and campuses have more stability and less volatility and are able to plan better for the future to meet the needs of their students and their communities.
Thank you. Okay, so I get this is a big mouthful. Senior Vice President Myron France.
You can just call me Myron. Thank you,
okay,
Madam.
There you go.
thank you, Vice Chancellor Mackey, too. I think, we don't think this way as much as we should, and that is the long-term. Your question really is generating some thought around the idea of long-term. We need to attract research to come to the University of Minnesota. We need to attract the top faculty to come here. And to the extent you're, as Vice Chancellor Mackey mentioned, you have these one-off programs or year-by-year funding, it's difficult to do. I think one of the things, the more we compete with talent out there to bring to our students and just talented researchers to bring, when researchers come to the University of Minnesota, they bring dollars with them. And then those dollars will get spent on student assistants and employees. We just, as you know, this couple of weeks ago announced the BioMade facility kickoff at the University of Minnesota St. Paul campus, where we're engaged in this in bio-industrial manufacturing partnership with the private sector. And that in and of itself is going to generate jobs just for that facility, let alone the kickoff things that could come as a result of that new bio-industrial research taking research from the lab to the next level and then taking it to the production facility. So the long-term ability to invest really is based on O&M dollars. And I think, you know, obviously we talked about this in the bonding bill in another related area, but just in terms of the O&M and making these things operational and keeping them running really provides, we need to compete. Minnesota, it's got a great higher education system, one of the best in the country. We need to be competitive. And the only way to be competitive is to be able to tell the marketplace that we're here for the long term, the state supports us. So the more we do the O&M support and the more we make that a something we can depend upon, the better we can plan for the future and support bringing more and more talent to the university. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Cleburne.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I want to get back to something that I heard both Chair Tomasoni say, and I want to ask Mr. Franz for clarification. But I would like to just interject this. So as we're talking about investments for our state institutions and the importance of operations and maintenance money, Minnesota does many, many things wonderfully. And I'm a very strong supporter of our college, our CFANS campus in St. Paul. But I would be remiss as a member of the Higher Education Committee if I didn't say there needs to be significant investment in the food science lab at the University of Minnesota. That building is antiquated and it's no longer competitive with other schools, and we want to remain in that top tier position of food science. So I'll just throw that out there. But my real question, and the reason I raised my hand, Madam Chair, was to talk about the president. I do recall hearing President Gabel talk about her mental health initiative that's being done with institutional funding. And I also heard Chair Tomasoni say that that's really important to him. So could you maybe talk a little bit about that, Mr. Franz, and let us know what that means and how that would be funded at the University of Minnesota?
Madam Chair?
Myron, no, I'm just kidding. Senior Vice President Myron Franz.
Thank you. I've been called a lot worse, Madam Chair. So I think one of the things that, you know, making that connection going forward, the president's mental health initiative, which, by the way, she kicked off with Chancellor Malhotra at Minnesota State, a clearly system-wide issue. I mean, this is it's not higher education. It's a societal issue. And I think the key for us is recognizing that the demands for mental health were going up before the pandemic started. Clearly, we've added new stressors and new issues through the pandemic that we need to address. But the fact that we need to be so much more engaged in that process, we need to make sure that students have access to and in a way that's meaningful. You know, and frankly, some of the new virtual stuff has helped in a way, because not all visits have to be in person, we now know. And so that's actually made some services more available. You have to be careful with that and from a clinical point of view. But we are funding that out of ongoing dollars at the University of Minnesota, because we believe it's just a core element of what we need to provide our students in terms of access, availability, education. You know, so many students don't necessarily think about it until that moment arises where they're in trouble, they have an issue, they need to talk to someone. And if you don't have the infrastructure in place, and then one of the things we're thinking about going forward is how do we build a footprint around the University of Minnesota, both in the, on all of our campuses, in terms of making sure that those resources are available in person, they're available online. So I cannot overstress the amount of effort and concern we have about providing these mental health services for students going forward. You know, my own son had issues, and thank goodness at the university he was attending, there were services available. I mean, it's something that happens to anybody or everybody at different times. And I think we really want to make sure that that's funded. And like I said, we've made that commitment through our current funding in fiscal 20 and 21, and going forward in fiscal 22, we will make that happen. And but it'd be easier to make it happen if we got all the money from the from this committee, by the way. But those are really critical. Mental health, presidential initiative on mental health is critical component for our students.
Representative Cleaver, do you have a follow up?
Well, I will just apologize to Chancellor Malhotra that I didn't include his name in that initiative. So yes, thank you so much.
Sure. So, okay, Chair Tomasoni, it looks like I see you on the screen. I'm thinking that means you would like to speak.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I want to thank Representative Cleaver for bringing up the mental health initiatives and commenting on it and understanding how important it is. As you probably know, the building you talked about would be a bonding issue and it would not be pertinent to this committee. But Mr. Franz was also talking about investment in research. And the thing that we maybe forget about is the permanent university funds, which I believe are well over $1 billion. And I know they fund about 220 endowed chairs at the university for research. And most of that money comes from the mining and logging industries. And so there is a significant amount of research that happens as a result of these funds. And so we shouldn't forget that there's different funds at the university that allow it to do many, many different things and to be very, very agile. And when it comes to seeking out the next generation of experimentation. So I'm pretty proud of the fact that a lot of the money comes from the area I'm from. And it not only goes into mineral research, but it goes into scholarships for, in fact, it's called an Iron Range Scholarship. And I believe there were over 300 of them last year. And they were all around at least $1,000 and some of them were $2,000. And they were 4 years. So there's money coming into the system from a lot of different places that we shouldn't forget about. And O&M is very, very important, but so are a real lot of other things.
Madam Chair.
Senior Vice President Franz.
Thank you, Senator Tomasoni, and you're so right. But, you know, I think a good example of the Permanent University Fund shows the example of planning. And when you make those investments and you make them over time, they do pay back. And those funds obviously are restricted because they're directed for certain activities. But what I really want to point out is when the state makes these smart investments and they make them year after year and makes, especially those that go back many, many, many years, they can really pay dividends in the future. I think that's what we need to make sure that today, are we making the kind of investments that we made when that fund was set up? Are we continuing to look forward to make sure that the next set of students, the next generation of students have those same opportunities that we're experiencing now? So I get excited about the opportunity to make tuition more affordable for everyone, to have everyone have opportunities for whatever kind of education they want beyond high school. And some of it could be higher ed and some of it could be otherwise. But I just think that we as a state have been so well credited for our talented workforce. And I mean, that's part of the reason we get AAA credit ratings is because we have employers that stay here, that move here, that develop into Fortune 500 companies, and they like the workforce because the workforce is dedicated, they're smart, and most of them were trained and educated in the state, either in high schools, the talent around the state, or at Minnesota State colleges and universities, or University of Minnesota, or the private colleges and universities too. This entire system, it's just phenomenal in the state of Minnesota. So I'm hoping that we'll come up with some new investments on the magnitude of those permanent university funds for the future to help generate more funds in the future.
Thank you. I don't see any. Oh, I see Representative Keeler's hands up. Sorry, I missed that. Go ahead, proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I just want to ask Senior Vice President Franz, when you say that our systems are phenomenal and that we do great, who is it phenomenal for? You know, we talk a lot about equity. We talk a lot about the fact that, you know, higher education isn't an opportunity for everybody. It's a struggle. You know, I've shared my own story a lot that if it wasn't for some of these supports and it wasn't for this kind of, you know, MSUM taught me grit, humility, and heart. That's how I got through school. But, you know, do we have a breakdown of who this is phenomenal for, and how are we continuing to invest in making sure that we're growing through an equity lens as well, so that what I believe the future is really phenomenal for everybody. And I say it over and over that education should not be an opportunity for some. It needs to be, it shouldn't be a privilege for some. It should be an opportunity for everybody. And so I just want to be mindful that when we're talking about how great our systems are, that we're mindful of the fact that we are still missing a large population when it comes to our bachelor's degrees, our master's degrees, and going out and becoming leaders in our society. So do you want to talk a little bit about, and maybe also Vice Chancellor Mackey can talk a little bit more about how we're going to grow in this phenomenal space around equity as well.
Senior Vice President Franz.
Madam Chair, thank you, Representative Keeter. I'm so glad you brought that up. I think one of the things that our commitment to making these opportunities more available and reducing the barriers for folks to get to the Minnesota, you know, I'll speak about the University of Minnesota, obviously. And I think, you know, our tuition free program for families under certain income amounts, our Promise Minnesota Scholarship Program. But we need to do more in terms of recruiting. We need to make sure that we're in the community telling people about what's available. And one of the things we've been doing is more outreach in the different communities so that students in all areas of the state, and the governor says it well, where, you know, your education shouldn't depend upon your zip code, right? The quality of your education. And we need to do more, and we're trying to do more to have more reach out to different communities to make sure that they're aware of opportunities and to be in those high schools, in those grade schools. I mean, you really can't start early enough to start describing and providing not just the opportunities for people, to make sure there are pathways to get there. So we have more work to do on that, and we're committed to making sure that the inclusive blend of Minnesota continues to expand more, so that we have a much more diverse and reflective student body of the state that we live in. And so I couldn't agree more. I think that is one of the exciting opportunities, is we need to figure out how to implement that in the way that starts happening sooner rather than later. And so I fully support your ideas.
Vice Chancellor Mackey.
Chair Bernardi, Representative Keeler, I would say at Minnesota State, we're very proud of the work that occurs at our colleges and universities, and that of the success that many of our students have, especially as we're sitting here in the midst of commencement ceremonies happening at our 53 campuses last week and this week and the following week. With that being said, though, we have a lot of work to do. And that work is acknowledged in the vision that the chancellor and the board has laid out for our colleges and universities related to Equity 2030, which is eliminating the educational equity gap at each one of our colleges and universities, and building that infrastructure in a better way to do that, as well as continuing to focus on that we have a lot of work to do in that area. And I think that was reflective also in our biennial budget request, and that we had of our $120 million, $45 million of it was geared towards equity and affordability to put more resources behind those initiatives. So we're very proud of the work that we do, but we have a vision that we're working towards with our Equity 2030. And as has been mentioned before, I don't think in our system's history we've seen such an initiative that has had so much grassroots support from all of our stakeholders of the importance of accomplishing that work for Minnesota and for our students.
Representative Keeler, do you have a follow-up?
I do. Thank you, Madam Chair. And more just thank you. I think there's one thing that we have all learned about me, is I love the opportunity to talk about education, equity, and inclusion, and what we're really doing towards that. And so I'm glad that it's something that everybody finds important, and I'm glad that it's, you know, an investment that everybody sees that's really valuable. I know that there's some programming that we have and some adjustments that we have in our side-by-side and in the omnibus package that we're bringing forward. And so Just want to make sure that we reflect on the fact that our university systems and our state colleges, you know, are also really on board with equity and making sure that we reduce the barriers that are in front of us when it comes for all of our students to be able to participate in the opportunity for education. So I appreciate it. I'm really excited about the work you're all doing. And coming from somebody who professionally works as a director for multicultural recruitment, I have a ton of ideas, and so I'd be happy to share any of them, because I do really believe that it starts with investing in the communities, not just doing recruitment, like come to our campus and see what we have to offer. We really have to go out to the communities and create those relationships and show that everybody matters. All of our students and potential leaders matter, and those spaces that they come from matter as well. So I appreciate the work you're doing. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Claussen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to comment along with that, that the Office of Higher Education working on the state attainment goal has done a lot of work in this area, trying to get our people that have a certificate of degree, two-year, four-year degree, up to 70% in their workforce between, 22 to 45 years of age. We've done quite a bit of work trying to assist all communities in reaching that goal. And I think through the legislature too, one example would be developmental education courses, the changes that we've made there to assist students. So I think on many fronts, we're making some headway, but we still have work to do, no doubt about that.
Okay, Chair Tomasoni, I see your face on the screen again. Is that a clue for me?
Madam Chair, I left a zero off one of my figures earlier, so I have to correct it. The Iron Range Scholarship Act, I said, goes to 300. It goes to about 3,000 kids a year, and I know of one person who actually works for the legislature, whose daughter got a $4,000 a year scholarship for 4 years, and so it's a significant amount of money that goes out as a result of what the activities that occur on the Iron Range. And for anybody who might be listening, this, you don't have to be from the Iron Range to get an Iron Range scholarship, and it's applicable to all five campuses of the University of Minnesota. So make sure you look for it and apply for it. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, public service announcement.
A little commercial,
great,
yeah.
Great, helping our students. Senator Claussen.
I'm going to back you up, Senator Tomasoni. When I was a high school principal, many of our students in Dakota County received those Iron Range scholarships, and I think you're right. I seem to remember most of them were in the range of $1,000 to $3,000, if I remember correctly. So it's a great program.
Representative Cleavorn.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi, and I would just say I'm so excited that we have this this committee to have this really wonderful dialogue. And to Chair Tomasoni earlier, yes, I did realize that was bonding. That is it is something that needs to be done, the food science lab. And since now I know that you are a strong supporter of the College of Agriculture, as am I, look forward to my future phone calls. I'll be happy to work with you on future issues.
I don't see any more hands raised, but I'm just going to do one last call out before we move on for discussion or questions from members. I see, is there other public testimony that we have on here today that would like to provide public testimony? Oh, I see a hand up. Paul Cervenek, please proceed.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I feel I would be remiss if I didn't take the opportunity to add into the conversation on equity that your investment in the state grant program is probably the single biggest equity investment that the state makes in the higher education budget. And we, of course, are very grateful for that investment, and we hope it would remain a priority. It sends the resources in the state grant program to the students. Representative Keeler spoke about at the outset of her question, and it makes a tremendous, tremendous difference for those students.
Thank you. Seeing no further hands up, I would like to go to Senator Tom Ossone to ask if he has any comments he would like to make before we adjourn today.
Oh, it's the same comment I have at the end of all of these meetings, Madam Chair. I think we will be able to get together and we will be able to put a bill together that we all will like. And I think we've gone over our budgets. I think we've gone over our side-by-side comparisons, and I think we've gone over what is in each of our bills to the point where we know what we are dealing with. The one wild card, obviously, is that we don't have a target yet. And so, having said that, Madam Chair, I appreciate the information today. I appreciate the meeting. I think we have to do some calculations on the new information that we have as far as the federal guidelines are concerned. But I don't see a reason to call a meeting tomorrow. So, with that, Madam Chair, I think that's as far as we need to go for today.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate our testifiers today and our robust conversation here and everyone who has joined us today. With that, the meeting is adjourned.